Hello again, everybody, and welcome back to another exciting, action-packed, jammed edition of The Crossbar. I am Travis Barrett.
I'm Dave Dyer.
And we are sports writers, as you probably know by now, because you've been listening since week one. We're sports writers here at the Kennebec Journal and the Morning Sentinel, and this is our weekly podcast.
It's our sixth episode now.
Wow.
Yep. There are TV shows that don't go this long. I think I said that episode two, but I'm saying episode
well, you weren't wrong then.
I wasn't wrong then either.
We're all shoveled out. Wow, what a week to have weather. I mean, it's a stretch run. All hockey teams, the conference ski meets, you name it. Everything is right in the stretch run. Basketball prelims start tonight. And yet we are constantly here in mid-February dealing with winter weather. Woo!
It always seems like Mother Nature has to come in at the absolute worst time remind us where exactly we live in the country. So,
last week we talked quite a bit about the Coney Gardner hockey game, leading into it, what we thought we might learn about both teams. And Dave, I'm happy to report, I don't think we were wrong.
No.
I think we thought Gardner was really good. Once again, beat a really good Class A North team in Coney, who was second in the Class A North standings at the time. Gardner still continues to lead B-South. They're having an incredible season. To the surprise of nobody, senior goaltender Michael Poirier was just fantastic. 35 saves. Didn't get the shutout. Came within 7 minutes and 27 seconds of getting the shutout. But I still thought he played much better than he did in a game against Brewer, where he did get his only shutout of the season. So I think Gardner, man, they got the recipe. You know, they got big forwards who get after it. They've got really good mobile defensemen, and they've got Poirier in the back. I think they are really. I know it seems like a month ago we were joking about could they make a run to the state championship game in Class B, and I think after having seen them now 4 or 5 times. I'm not going to say I'd be shocked if they didn't make it, but they have as good a chance as anybody, probably a better chance than most, in Class B South of making it to the Class B state championship game.
Well, and I know you mentioned before how, you know, Coney's coach, Chad Ford, is not much for moral victories, but it seems to, I mean, whenever you're able to, you know, have these tests and you're able to pass these tests and, you know, put up a good game for both teams, not just, you know, Gardner, but Coney, too. I mean, they fought the whole way as well. It's nice. And, again, it's this, you know, there's the Coney-Gardner rivalry in most other sports goes, you know, way, way back. But, you know, it's nice. It kind of rekindled now in hockey. And it's, I think it's something that'll be going on for a little while. So it's nice to see. And, yeah, Gardner, it's just, you know, obviously, from a sports writer perspective, where it certainly would be nice to see two of our area teams, you know, meet up in that state final. But they're passing every, they're just the check mark for every test that they're having this season, and they're looking pretty strong going into the playoffs.
In addition to the play of Poirier, I thought two things kind of jumped out at me. One from the Coney side was And Chad Foy, the Coney coach, he was great. He sort of laughed me off when I asked him about moral victories. He's not a moral victory guy. He's great, great coach, great guy. But I thought, short of losing 2-1, which they did, they had to feel really good about a lot of things. They outshot Gardner 36-19, I think it was. They really carried the play over the second half of the game. They kind of did what Coney does. I mean, they did it a little bit. They did fall in that trap of a slow start. But I think they got good play in net from Dalton Bowie. And they were solid. You know, the first period of that game only yielded a total of 11 shots. I mean, both teams were really tight in the neutral zone, really good in their own end about keeping things on the perimeter and not letting traffic in front of their goalies. So I think if you're Coney, you're probably okay. You know, loss stinks and all that. But realistically, they played the kind of game they wanted to play, and they had some success at it. If they get a break, they get a little more traffic, they get a and Poirier didn't give up any rebounds. I mean, that was the biggest thing. Mm. Get a rebound, get on that, you get another goal. I think they're pretty happy. I think for Gardner, on that side of it, one of the really impressive parts about that was that two nights earlier, they had gone down to Falmouth to play Greeley, had a 4-2 lead going into the third period and blew the lead and lost the game. And that stung those kids a little bit. And they were really essentially tasked with the same thing. Went into the third period against Coney with a 2-goal lead and had decided, well, we're not giving it up. And I think that was a character. That was a gut check for them.
Well, you and with Coney, you just mentioned it like a couple seconds ago, but all you can do is play your best game and then, you know, you hope for the lucky break, the lucky, you know, the lucky rebound, the lucky, you know, that open shot, whatever you could find. And it's tough when you're taking on a hot goalie like Poirier is right now.
Yeah.
It's pretty hard. So, I mean, they should certainly, Coney has a lot to, moral victories might not be the number one thing, and you certainly rather have a win over a loss, but there's a lot to take away on Coney's end, I think, from that game. They should certainly be proud of the way they played.
Yeah, what they do need to do, they've got, and I know they're down to their final three games of the regular season here, they've got to figure out a way to start more quickly. They allow teams to get a goal, get a couple of goals, and then they start playing. We saw it against the Levitt, Gray, and Gloucester Poland team. They start slow. They let a team get a lead. Then they respond. I mean, one thing Coney does well is they'll respond to the adversity. The problem is they kind of wait around for the adversity to happen early in hockey games. And I think, especially when you get to the playoffs, that's what you can't have. You got to be going right off. And it was interesting because talking to Gardner's Ryan Kelly after that game, you know, he said, we know the book on them is they start a little slow. And they had some trouble scoring goals in bunches this year. And we wanted to get out and get a lead and make them chase us. We wanted to make them chase us. And I think it worked.
I think, I don't know why, because it works so well in the movie, but the flying V should be implemented more into an offensive strategy.
It worked for
Gordon Bombay.
I'll be sure to ask about that. All right, we're going to switch gears a little bit. We're staying on the topic of hockey.
Yes.
Saw Waterville play... probably got another 112 school name, but Holton Hodgdon, essentially. Waterville beat him 3-1 on Saturday afternoon up at Colby. Interesting situation there where the Zamboni, which is electrically powered at Colby, has been on the fritz a little bit, so they had a backlog of games for the day. So they only made ice between games. They weren't making it between periods. It was ugly in the third period. The puck just didn't want to stay still. It was bouncing around. And I think for a team like Waterville that wants to play fast, they could play fast, but most of the time the puck was behind them because it couldn't keep up. And that was too bad to watch. But one thing that we never – you're kind of trained as a sports writer to not really write about officiating. And frankly, to be 100% truthful with you, I'm a big believer in officials don't win or lose you games. You do. And if you put yourself in a position for a bad call late to cost you a game, it's on you because you probably should have taken care of business earlier. Having said that, that was the worst officiated high school hockey game I have ever seen because all the little ticky-tack, chippy stuff, while everybody was sleepwalking through the first period, that you let go, builds and builds and builds and builds, and then you get to a third period where the puck's not moving, the game's not fast, players are bunched up along the boards, a ton of board battles. You let all that stuff go. And eventually, especially in close game, kids are going to get frustrated. And they're going to start taking whacks at each other, taking runs at each other. And you could have eliminated all of it. And it was both ways. I mean, it was absolutely both ways. It was awful. It was awful to watch, and it was...
Sounds like old-time hockey.
Games can't be...
Eddie Shore.
You could say that, but here's the problem. We're talking about high school hockey where you can't drop the gloves and settle it and release it yourself. So if you don't make those calls, the kids are going to take it on themselves. And again, especially in a game that had trouble finding flow as it went on and on because of the ice conditions, it just became that much worse. It was really too bad because I thought Holton Hodgdon, which is in the thick of the playoff structure there, fourth or fifth, they played a really good game. I mean, their goaltender was outstanding, made a ton of huge saves, especially early when the ice was good.
Yeah.
They were scoreless after the first period despite being outshot, whatever it was, 16-5, I think it was, and they had a lot to feel good about, but boy, that game just deteriorated fast, and it's too bad, because I think both teams deserve better in the end.
Officiating, unfortunately, and we had an excellent piece earlier in the winter sports season on basketball officiating, and how the numbers, and being able to get new officials, and to up the number of officials throughout the state in basketball has been a real struggle. I have no doubt in my mind that that's the same story for probably every sport right. in the entire state.
Yeah, I wouldn't disagree.
You know, it's a tough deal because, you know, a lot of these guys are, you know, they don't work the, well, most of them don't work the college, you know, certainly don't work the pro game. You know, they're guys who come from a 9-to-5 job or wherever it is they come from, and they, you know, they come, they work, and, you know, for, because they love the game, and then they go home. And unfortunately, they have to deal with a lot of angry parents one way or the other, good or bad. Through like, and it's a thankless job. It's tough. It's a tough. I couldn't do it. I could never do it. I thought maybe once, maybe I could work like the base paths of a baseball as a baseball umpire, but no, I don't think I could do it because you have to be able to like shake everything off. You know, you're gonna get yelled at the entire game. That's coaches, players, fans. It's tough. I mean, you go out there, you want to do the best job you can, but you know, unfortunately, officials are human too, and there's no replay system in Maine high school sport. I wish there would be, but you know, but it's tough. But yeah, there's good crews, there's bad crews, and you're gonna get a game like you got the other day where it's just unfortunately it all kind of comes together and.
Yep. And I haven't seen too many of those this year, to be honest. I haven't seen any. I'll say this, a couple of things. They're not volunteers. They're volunteering their time and they want to do it, but they draw a paycheck at the end.
True.
And here's my other issue. These teams spend all week long. You know, in Gardner's case, those kids are up at practice at 5:30 in the morning, you know, on the ice, working hard every day to get better. They're held accountable. They work on certain things. They're asked to do certain things. They're asked to behave a certain way. All of the teams I'm talking about now. And when referees show up and you watch the first period and it looks like, you know, they're just waving off ice because they don't feel like having a face off, or they're looking, it's not that big of a hit, or, well, I'm going to give them something. So
that's all right, that might be a little bad. Yeah.
That's not fair to anybody. And it's you're not doing your job at that point. And so
I think my devil's advocates, you know, come back might have just gone out the window.
I understand. You miss a call here, you miss a call there. Right. They're in a tough spot.
Wave it off, ice. Come on.
I get all that. Yeah. I get all that. And I think the other thing we forget about referees sometimes, especially in hockey, they don't have the best view. They're not sitting up in the 15th row, you know, right, looking down at the ice. They're on it in the middle of it. But I don't know. I just feel like you gotta. We don't talk about it much, but you know, I bring it up because I thought the other day was an example where I think it's appropriate to have that discussion that they played a major part in that game both ways.
Zamboni deal, that's pretty tough.
Pretty gross.
You need a working Zamboni machine. I mean, that's just...
Yeah.
That just goes without saying. You might as well just throw a bunch of, you know, water onto a baseball field or something. Or
I had a sneaky suspicion that had it not... let's say it was Messalonsky in Waterville. You're going to get into the discussion of how easy it is to reschedule ice time. But, you know, that Holton team, they got almost a 3-hour bus trip to get here.
Yeah.
For a 1 p.m. start. Pretty sure they're not going to get there and decide, we don't want to play the game and drive all the way back and try and find another time to come down. But I do wonder if it had been two local schools that had a 15-minute drive to the rink, if there might have been some discussions about, why don't we just find another time to play this game?
They could have given Colby College. They could have given maybe like free lodging for the night for the Holton kids. You know, have them. Give them the college experience for a night. Get them ready. These are kids who are getting ready to go to college.
Come on, Blaze. It's like a free recruiting trip.
Yes. You have them go stay in the freshman dorm or something. You know, hang out with the kids. Be like, man, what's college like? Oh, it's so tough. You got like 8 classes a day.
Oh, yeah, I got all these...
Forget college. No, definitely don't forget college. Go to college,
I'm
kids.
Going juniors, eh?
Yeah, I'm going to go
juniors, eh?
I'm going to the Quebec League. I'm going. Sidney Crosby can do it, so can I.
Anyway, that's my story.
I missed the Lewiston Maniacs, by the way. I'm just throwing that out there. Random fact.
Man, I tell you what, Quebec Major Junior Hockey makes me laugh when you got 15 and 16 year old kids out there dropping gloves and throwing haymakers. And I'm trying to figure out what the point of this is. All right? What are we teaching these kids?
Old time hockey.
Old time hockey.
Eddie Shore.
Old time hockey. All right.
That takes care of that.
Next topic. What do you got?
Well, I would say that, you know, we just mentioned at the top of the show, but the weather this week has become the star of this whole week in high school sports.
Yeah.
And specifically with the Kennebec Valley Athletic Conference / Mountain Valley Conference ski meet. Unfortunately, it looks like it got suspended. It was supposed to be day two today, and by today I mean Tuesday. That's the time in which we're broadcasting today. But day two was supposed to go on today and got suspended. And it's suspended indefinitely because there may not be a day two of this meet, unfortunately, because next week is states. By the time they get a chance to make it up, we're late into the week. States begin, I believe, Tuesday of next week, if I'm not mistaken. I'd have to double-check the schedule. But there's not enough time. There's not enough time to get ready or to go from the conference meet to the state meet. Now, we've had day one, thankfully, so there at least was some competition. But now, that might have been it, that one day. Now, to break things down for you, this was supposed to, it was supposed to begin early last week and got postponed got snowed out.
Skiing.
I believe it was Tuesday. Tuesday. One week from today, a week ago.
We see the irony of snow wreaking havoc on skiing.
I know, okay. Right? It's true. But they gotta get there. That's the problem. It's not about the snow on the mountain, it's just getting there.
Make the Nordic race the competition to get there.
But so that got pushed back to late last week. So they got day one in, and then now unfortunately it's Snowmageddon 2017. This week, we already got 2 feet of snow. We're getting one more foot, allegedly, in the middle of this week, and they can't find the time to run that second day, which is really tough, and it's unfortunate because Miranda Cook and Mount Blue were battling each other, both in boys and girls, Alpine and Nordic, it's unfortunate that it might not, or most likely will not, come down to that second day. And they're going to go straight to states. And Mount Abram, by the way, MVC, Mount Abram had a heck of a run that first day as well. So it's tough. It's a tough deal. And for a sport that, you know, loves snow so much, it's just, yeah, you're right. The irony of the fact that they can't get in the second day because of snow.
I remember talking to some ski people in January, worried about snow conditions and if they were going to have enough. And it was at Miranda Cook and at Leavitt for two separate Nordic meets where they're out on the course the night before moving snow around. And careful what you wish for, okay? Because the rest of us are paying for it now.
Yeah, you know, it's rough. But so while there might be some other sports that are or that will be affected by the snowstorm, those guys I think might be the ones who got hit the hardest of anybody, unfortunately, because
yeah, that's a bummer.
That is a bummer. It's unfortunate because the competition this past week was pretty good.
Well, especially in a sport like that where everything you do during the year, all the training you do and all the dual meets you have are really just gearing you towards conference meets and state meets.
And the coaches will tell you that.
And then you lose it.
Yeah.
And then you lose the one thing you're working for.
The coaches will tell you that. And they'll even tell you that the conference meet is to prep for states,
right.
Not unlike swimming,
right,
for example. Or track, even.
That's wild.
But still, you still want that time.
Yeah.
And you still want that competition before you hit states.
Yeah.
And instead of getting the full 2 days worth, they are probably only getting one.
Well, and I think, too, that the weather has had... skiing obviously was affected, but it's not the only thing that's been affected. I know, you know, a couple of basketball teams last week were playing games that mattered. They needed to win to make it to the postseason, and got two or three practices wiped out during the week because of school cancellations or half days. And, in hockey, Waterville's Justin Wentworth, 39 goals, Justin Wentworth, talked about they missed two or three practices last week, and he felt like that led to a sluggish start over the weekend. So everybody's kind of felt it. I'm not going to go with it's the first time in recent memory I can remember this because I know it's happened in years past. But the timing of it is incredible.
Yeah.
You know, how late it is. It's not December. It's not really January where you've got time to move all this stuff around. It's really, right, like I said at the top, you know, it's crunch time for everybody. whether it's stretch drive in hockey, conference and state meets in skiing, state meet in swimming, or the basketball tournament starting. It's crunch time for everybody, and you're just being thrown a ton of obstacles here that are out of everybody's control.
Now, I'm going completely theoretical here because there's nothing out there, you know, from the Maine Principal Association or anybody else saying anything about anything here. I'm simply, this is coming right off the top of my head.
Oh, look out.
Would it be a ridiculous thing if, obviously, the school year is going to start when it starts in early September?
Mm-hmm.
But what if the sports season,
mm-hmm.
and would it be breaking any sort of rules, laws, or anything, if we actually began the school sports season, and I mean games, I'm not talking,
right.
I'm not talking training camp.
Oh boy, here we go.
I'm saying, like, beginning of August, we start training camp.
Right.
Middle of August, we have week one for football season.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, soccer and everybody else. I'm sorry, I shouldn't just go, like, completely full blown. What if that happened? If we just started 2 weeks earlier in the year for all, you know, to get the whole thing kicked off.
Mm-hmm.
So that way, you know, there's not a whole lot of things that get in the way of the fall season being knocked out. Mm-hmm. It helps the winter season out. And let's say we had a great winter and we didn't have to worry so much about, you know, that aspect of it. It might even help the spring season out when we've got, you know, mud and...
Here's where I'm going to start.
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
First of all...
I don't want to sound naive here, but it seems logical.
The winter and the spring are far more affected by weather than the fall ever is.
Right.
Okay? Because football and soccer both largely can play in the rain. You know? As long as you don't get 3 days of torrential downpour to, you know, standing water on fields, they can play. Starting your winter sports season earlier isn't going to help skiing because you need the snow.
Right.
So that's no good. So you lose there. And starting baseball earlier and softball earlier is never going to happen because you got to wait for the snow to melt anyway. So you can't. I mean, as it is, they try and start in early April.
Well, maybe that's the catch up time for, you know, if kids are feeling exhausted or whatever from the first two seasons.
Here's the problem. The problem is that the MPA, we're so beholden to the idea of having these facilities. The old auditorium, is it the Cross Auditorium or the Cross Center? They're both Cross Centers now, right?
The Cross Insurance Arena?
The one in Bangor.
Yeah.
Okay, that one. And the one in Portland, the Cross Insurance Center.
Center, yeah.
Okay, and the Augusta Civic Center.
You mean the Cumberland County Civic Center and
and the Bangor Auditorium. That's what I'm talking about.
I don't care about this other
place. All right. So the Cumberland County Civic Center and the Bangor Auditorium.
Well, Bangor Auditorium is officially the mall. You know, it's...
All right, enough.
Okay.
I'm getting off topic.
Okay, that's...
But the point is that we're so beholden to having those facilities open in this February vacation week for the basketball tournament that everything is scheduled around that.
Right.
And I've always said they've got to figure out a way to move it, back to the end of February. You can start your season a little bit later.
Mm-hmm.
Heck, you could start your regular seasons after the new year,
right?
January 2nd or whatever your first. And then you've got Christmas week for all of your preseason tournaments and scrimmages and all that stuff, and then start in January, and then you've really got until March, then middle of March you're wrapping up your tournaments, and then the middle of April you're starting your spring sports. And I think that makes perfect sense. I don't know why.
You can push the whole March Madness thing with the high school basketball tournament coinciding with college or whatever.
I think there's
a bunch of ways to market it to people.
Yeah.
You're certainly getting plenty of fans to go to the thing. I mean, that's one of the biggest revenue makers for...
People are still going to go.
Yeah.
People are still going to go. I think February vacation week is nice ideally it's nice because you're getting a bunch of games done. But you know what? Like, those Class D South regional games are still being played on Saturday mornings at 8:30.
Right.
So you can still do that. And if you got to shuffle a couple of games around so that your tournament doesn't take 8 days, it now takes 11 days and goes into the next...
Right.
Look, the people are going to be there.
Right.
They're going to come to the game. They're going to come to the 8:30 game for a regional championship, even if it's on a school night on a Wednesday. Nobody's going to care. They're going to be there.
And I know they're, like, doing this with the students, you know, health and wellness in mind.
Right.
If you surveyed, I would bet anything, if you surveyed the students,
mm-hmm.
like the players,
mm-hmm.
and what they would prefer, they would probably prefer doing that.
I think it would make it look, athletes are routine oriented, right?
Right.
So now you go from this, we play at 6:30 at night, we go to school, we have our routine, we get our team meal. Now you're going to, you got to be at the Civic Center to play a 2:30 in the afternoon game on a Saturday. And so it's like, well, when do I wake up and when do we meet? Just play them at night.
Yeah.
Let's figure out a way to do this.
It's coming to the
table.
Because
the other thing is, I don't think the winter sports season should be wrapping up as we're all buried in 6 feet of snow.
Yeah, that doesn't seem to make a whole lot of sense either, does it? Yeah.
I think that was my rant.
That could probably count as a rant.
That was my rant.
But I think it's tough because something does need to be figured out about the high school sports. I mean, as a whole, I'm talking the entire year because at the end of the day, we're in Maine. Like, we have so much different types of weather that affect high school sports.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no perfect way of doing it. Let's just throw that out there. That's one idea of probably many ideas that can be tossed out
there. There is a perfect way. It's my way. What I just said was perfect, Dave.
There we go.
It's perfect.
There we go. But at the end of the day, you know, if something could be, you know,
perfect,
like thrown out there, there could be some way of fixing it. I just feel like the current, or the way it's been done, really, for
ever
now, just doesn't seem to.
Yeah, my way's perfect.
To work, especially in this day and age of global warming.
Really should do it my way.
All that other stuff.
Recurring.
That's beyond my. That's way out of my depth, and I'm not going to go.
Do it my way.
Into figuring out the future of.
Just do it my way.
Climate change.
Just do it my way. Do you get anything you want to apologize for?
He's an angry elf. Nothing to apologize for this week.
Me either.
I'd like to thank Plymouth State football for having me speak at the banquet at their banquet. I get to speak there every year, but
I'd like to apologize to all the people who have to listen to you.
So, well,
is that fair?
I got a round of applause after I spoke.
Pity applause.
Throwing that out there. A couple hundred people.
They were happy it was over.
I'm starting to sound like Trump now. There are a couple hundred people there. They loved it. Believe me, it was great. It was the greatest. In fact, they gave me a standing ovation.
And if you don't,
there was about 1,000 people there. Check the photos.
If you don't believe it, you're sad.
That's right.
Sad.
Out of here. You're fired.
Wow, that was pretty good, Dave.
So I
didn't know you had that in.
Been watching a lot of Saturday Night Live lately.
I didn't know you had that in. It's too bad there's not video on this, because you should have seen the hand gestures.
Let's talk. I know you didn't want to go crazy on this, all but right. Let's talk Claude Julien just for a second.
Yeah.
Because it was the day, I'm pretty positive, it was the day after we did our podcast last week, right smack dab in the middle of the Patriots championship parade there in Boston.
Yeah.
The Boston Bruins fired Claude Julien, who was in his 10th year coaching the Bruins. He was the man behind their latest Stanley Cup championship and was given an unceremonious boot out of town.
He was.
Unfortunately. Now, I know you wrote a pretty solid column this week, so I would like your take to start this whole thing off.
I don't think it's his fault, and I know people are going to point to the 3-game winning streak under Cassidy and say, see, but you know what? Here's how it works. First of all, I have a strict 10-game rule. You make a coaching change or a managerial change, give me 10 games, and let's see. Because any player worth his salt, when they see a coach they like get fired because they've played like crap all year, is going to play their butts off. You know, for those first few games. And they knew they had this week's break coming up. So, you know, let's see what happens, you know, where we're at 3 weeks from now. Let's see. Because I still feel like they don't have a backup goaltender. They don't have, you know, they've got like 2.5 defensemen probably. And they've got 2 forward lines and a bunch of junk. I mean, they're a bunch of minor leaguers and young prospects and AHL defensemen. And you can't win that way. You can't win in the NHL. You're not going to go deep in the playoffs. And so what if they make the playoffs? They're going to get bounced in the first round by one of those higher seeds. So it's not the coach. It's the roster. It's Sweeney and Neely. And I saw a great line on Twitter, and I agree with it 100%, which is, how dare you, Cam Neely, for finding ways to make me hate you.
Because
I don't want to hate. I want to love Cam. I want to hug him and buy him a beer every time I see him.
He's one of the
best
players in team history.
One of the best Bruins ever.
Yeah.
But boy, as a team president, horrendous. Horrendous.
I think it's incredibly sad that a guy who's going to go down in the history of the franchise as one of its best coaches gets this boot. Now we texted back and forth. First and foremost, 10 years is a long time.
Long time.
Long time for an NHL coach.
He was the longest tenured NHL coach at the time of his firing.
Right. So, but it's incredibly sad to me that a bad front office that is going to be exposed, going to be by the time this season ends, if not this season, the next season or the year, like however long, it's going to be exposed.
Yep.
But to throw a Band-Aid onto it,
mm-hmm.
And look, I'm sorry, your team is the way it's going to be throughout the rest of the season.
Yep.
Nothing is going to change about it.
Nope.
So why can't you at least let Julian finish out this year?
Yep.
Then if you want to get rid of him, get rid of him.
Yep.
It doesn't shock me that Julian lost his job. He had been on the hot seat
yep.
for years.
Yep.
Every year we were talking about, you know, all Bruins fans are like, oh, he's going to get fired, he's going to get fired, he's going to get, there's rumors of his firing. So it didn't shock me that he got the boot. It shocked me that he got the boot in the middle of the season. Or near the, you know,
yeah, well, the timing,
just past the All-Star.
I was
going to
say, what's curious is the timing of the in-season firing, because it could have been right before the All-Star break.
Right.
It could have been last month in the middle of that horrendous, you know, stretch of games, especially where they went to Pittsburgh and just
right.
got embarrassed. That's when you expect a coach to get fired.
Right. And firing him the day of the Patriots trade.
Yeah, matters.
So I know Sweeney vehemently denies that it was,
yeah.
you know, to lessen the media coverage or
yeah,
or to hide it, but it's still weak sauce to me. I still don't.
Well, I think it. I know the popular, especially the Boston media, the narrative is how dare you do this in the middle of a Patriots championship? Steve Buckley was at the press conference and he opened up the press conference by grilling Sweeney about the timing of it. Now let's be honest here. Let's be honest. These guys in professional sports, especially,
yeah.
they're in their own little insular world.
True, true.
He's think when that Super Bowl ends, he's thinking hockey.
Yeah,
he's probably thinking it during the game,
saying,
right?
Yeah.
So
he might not even watch.
So he wakes up the next morning or the Tuesday.
Yeah.
It's been in his mind. It's 48 hours ago.
Right.
It's ancient. His focus is on his team. So I'm going to give him a pass on that. I think it's a stupid decision, and for all the reasons we just talked about. But let's not pretend like how dare a New England team step on the Patriots, because that's what happens in the Boston media,
right?
We love the Patriots.
Right.
I get it. I hate them, but I get it. I don't think that's the issue. I think the timing of it to me is questionable. Like I said, because at the point they're at in the season, I don't buy. We had a few games and some practice days. What? And the other point I was going to make is Sweeney could have done it on Saturday before the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Super Bowl morning. The day after,
probably would have the same.
It would have had the same reaction.
Yeah.
So if he's dead set on, we've got to do it now because we have XYZ practice days coming up, then it's not going to matter. It's going to be the same narrative.
But the big point being that it's really unfortunate
yes.
that it's not even a Band-Aid. It's not even a Band-Aid.
Yeah. Yeah.
For what is a horrific front office
right.
that. You know, diehard Bruins fans, they already know this has nothing to do with Claude Julien.
Right.
This has everything to do with a horrific front office
yeah.
that's put together a bad team.
Bad team. Bad roster.
That's not getting better.
Have to wonder if when they promoted Cassidy from the AHL last year to join Julien's staff this year.
Yeah. If they were already thinking about
this. Oh, they were definitely already thinking about it. But the cynic in me wonders how much Cassidy was feeding Sweeney information behind Julian's back. Like, I don't know why he's doing this. This is how it opens up so many cans of worms. And like we said all along, you know, back in December and January, when we said if you're going to fire him, you better have a plan. You better have a guy. And they don't really have a guy.
Yeah.
Just because you won some games in the AHL as a head coach, to me, doesn't. He was horrendous in Washington, whatever it was, 12 years ago, 15 years ago, and. You know, success in the AHL against a bunch of minor league players, to me, it doesn't mean anything. Doesn't mean anything. You got to win in the NHL.
It's not looking positive. Let's put it that way. With the Bruins, it's not. I mean, they are the clear, like, of the professional teams in
yeah.
Boston.
They're in the worst shape.
One. They're in the worst shape right now.
They have to find a way. I mean, the only way they're going to get to the playoffs, and do anything, and by do anything, I mean. Maybe win a round, not get swept. I don't mean win two or three rounds and get to the conference finals. But the only way they're even going to stick around and be in the conversation is Rask is going to have to play every night, and he's going to have to play out of his mind.
And he's going to be exhausted. He's not going to be able to do it.
We've seen it this year when he gets in those stretches where he's played too many games and he's
Tim
just,
Thomas wouldn't have been able to do it, by the way. Yeah, if he were, you know, still around, he wouldn't have been able to do it.
Yeah, it's going
to
be a long rest of the winter. So we got 18 feet of snow on the ground, and the Bruins are going to be terrible and miss the playoffs. That's what I have to look for.
But pitchers and catchers have reported
thank,
to Fort Myers for
thank
the Boston
goodness.
Red Sox.
Thank goodness. I'm ready, man. Let's do it.
And we're, what, like a month from opening?
Six
month,
weeks.
6 weeks
yeah,
from opening day.
April.
I'm that loser that actually looks forward to spring training games.
Wow.
I will watch spring training
games. I watch the first 10 minutes of the first one, get all excited, and then remember why I can't wait for the regular season.
I'm sick this way, I guess, but I actually enjoy watching the guys who will probably end up playing in Portland for the Sea Dogs.
Fair enough.
Or, you know, guys who might be on the fringe of Portland, Pawtucket.
So then you love Bruce Cassidy. Minor leagues, man.
In a way. Well, I'm certainly excited that he's 3-0 in his first 3-0. Don't get me wrong. I mean,
love that he's 3-0.
Yeah.
Good call.
Cassidy.
Man. Good call.
And the Sundance Kids.
Thank God for spring training.
Thank God for spring. It's going to be a good squad. It's going to be a good squad. When you don't have to worry about a whole lot of spring training battles, you're in a good spot. That's all I'm saying.
That's true.
It's going to be so weird without David Ortiz, though.
It's going to be so odd. Did you hear that Panda's in good shape? Have you heard that?
I've seen photos. He looks like a completely different person.
I don't know if you've seen anywhere. It's all they talk about.
Yeah.
That'll get old in another week or so.
Well, as long as he's not Instagramming in the restroom, then he'll probably be.
That's true.
It's going to have to work. They have no third baseman right now. Not unless you move Bogarts to, let's say Panda completely fails to start the season off.
Yeah.
And then the only way that you can make it possibly work is either you move. There's two ways. You can either have the most natural thing would be Bogarts moving from short to third. But I know they don't want to do that.
Right.
They want him to be the everyday shortstop. Or
as they should.
Or Hanley Ramirez, instead of being the DH, everyday DH, is playing third, which you probably don't want.
You don't want that to begin with. You don't want that.
Moreland's going to be playing every day at first base, so that's not even
supposedly
an issue. Well, he's a Gold Glover. I mean, yeah, they'll give him the long rope to hang himself with.
They will, but I think the nice thing about it is if he can't hit or he can't handle Boston, which we've seen, you know, with some people coming in,
right.
If he can't handle Boston. We know Hanley can do it.
It's gonna be. They will have the best outfield in baseball, though.
They're gonna have a great.
That's
outfield.
Really. Benintendi. And I love the Benintendi. Yeah, Benintendi kid.
He's the man.
He's that's gonna be fun.
He's basically me when I grow up.
Yeah,
that's who I'm gonna be.
Sure,
that's who I'm gonna be.
Sure,
when I grow up,
I'm gonna anger my dad right now. He looks like a young Yaz.
Oh, wow.
I'm kidding. No, wow. That's, I'm not going to put that on him. That's ridiculous.
Well, you didn't go like young Ted Williams. I think you're...
Yeah, no, I won't. No. But he's good. He's good. And that outfield's... I mean, Jackie Bradley Jr. too. So. All right,
follow us on Twitter. I'm at TBarrettGWC.
I'm at Dave_Dyer.
Go to centralmaine.com/sports. Keep up with all the high school sports, high school tournaments, center court, high school hockey stretch run and playoffs. We're going to have it all, so make sure you check us out regularly.
We are literally going to be all over the place, especially in the next 2 weeks.
Speaking of which, I got to run. I got a girls' playoff game I got to get to.
There you go.
All right, I'm Travis Barrett.
I'm Dave Dyer.
We'll see you next week on The Crossbar.